NPR.
This is The Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith.
And I'm Patty Hirsch, your humble editor.
Aw, we love you, Patty.
All this week, we're talking about bubbles, where enthusiasm for a product or commodity becomes so intense that rational market behavior disappears.
Buyers pursue a commodity with such intensity that the price swells up like a bubble or a balloon.
Or a goiter.
Or a goiter. Until eventually, the bubble bursts.
And these bubbles in the past have also been called manias, implying a kind of madness on behalf of consumers. Mad, as the Australians say, as a cut snake.
Mad as a box of frogs.
Mad as a bicycle. Because that's true. Bicycles are pretty crazy. I mean, if you'd never seen a bicycle before, you'd think they were pretty bizarre,
that's
right?
That's true.
Mean, the two wheels, the spokes, the chain, the tiny torture device masquerading as a seat. And that's before you've even got to the clothing, all that neon lycra.
Or the riding uphill.
Or the, well, that's completely insane. In riding uphill in neon lycra and that helmet that makes you look like something Sigourney Weaver might hunt through a darkened spaceship.
They do look like aliens.
Right?
And in the 1890s, there was an actual bicycle mania in Britain. The Great British Bicycle Bubble.
As opposed to the Great British Baking Show, which of course is also a mania.
That's true.
And prior to 1890, bicycles were expensive, impractical, and really uncomfortable. I mean, think about that penny farthing, right? With a big front wheel and a tiny
terrifying.
Black back wheel.
Seems
terrifying.
So treacherous.
Right? You need to fall off that thing and that's it.
Goodbye.
Indeed. Will Quinn is a professor of finance at Queen's University in Belfast and something of a specialist on the Great British Bicycle Bubble. He says right around 1890, the British bicycle business went through a period of rapid innovation.
So they invented the diamond frame, and they invented the chain, which meant you don't need this big front wheel anymore, and they invented the pneumatic tire, which was great for the very poor quality roads that existed at the time.
The new bicycles looked pretty similar to the bicycles that we ride today. They were safer, they were more comfortable, and they gave riders a relatively cheap and quick way to get out of the smog-wreathed cities of industrial Britain and into the glorious countryside. They were a huge and immediate hit. Newspapers ran these lavish stories about the cycling lifestyle, and there was this huge spike in ridership, especially among the ladies.
Bicycles weren't exactly cheap, about £10 on average, when a decent working class wage was about £300 a year.
Whoa, that's like a Lexus.
Yeah.
Right?
Kind of is like a Lexus. But there were a lot of rental companies out there that rented bikes for as much as £1 a week. And as cycling caught on, with people joining cycle clubs all over the country, people began buying their own bikes.
It really started in the spring of 1896. So at this point, it's become clear that something's going on with bicycles. They're much more popular. There's very high demand that the existing companies can't really meet.
There are about 15 or 20 public companies making bicycles at this point. But with so much demand, there's clearly an opportunity for an entrepreneur with a little pizzazz and flair. Someone like Ernest Terra Hooley. This guy's a property dealer and a bit of a scoundrel, frankly, who somehow manages to convince a bank to give him a massive loan.
Hooley then pays this heart-stopping amount of money for a company called Pneumatic Tyre, £3 million. That's nearly 10 times the company's original valuation. It's like an early unicorn, ye olde unicorn. He renames the company the Dunlop Pneumatic Tyre Company. And then he turns around and flips that company. He sells it for £5 million.
And Dunlop wasn't a bicycle maker. It made tires. But still, entrepreneurs all over Britain witnessed the apparently massive success of this trade. And now everybody wants to be in the bicycle business.
Within a year, the number of public companies associated with bicycle manufacturing goes from a couple dozen to more than 100. There's the Birmingham Small Arms, Humber & Co., Rudge of Coventry, the Raleigh Cycle Company. Oh, the British. They really know how to name things. And dozens of others. And all of them are competing in the stock market to raise capital to make bikes for the cycle-crazed people of Britain. And you can just see this bubble swelling.
Except that this bubble isn't actually about the bicycles so much. It's about the shares of bicycle companies. Because the price of a bicycle stays about the same throughout 1896. But the price of bicycle company stock goes up like a rocket.
You had a very rapid run-up in prices. So prices rose by about 200% in 2 months in 1896.
Wow, 200%.
Yep, 200%. And this early stage of the mania, it is very easily explained. So you have high dividends at these companies. You have these spectacular mergers taking place, and prices rise accordingly. The really hard part to explain is why a year later prices are even higher, even though you now have four or five times as many companies on the market. And they're not all, clearly not all going to survive.
So part of the puzzle was that even though there were many more companies making bikes, increasing the supply to more than match demand, none of them cut their prices much.
So the price of bicycles stayed much the same. There was some sort of unofficial collusion between the British companies where they agreed to just compete on quality.
There was only so long that that could last. I mean, there was this intense competition, and nobody was cutting their prices. And there was this massive increase in the supply of bicycles that basically threatened to overwhelm demand. And then, as happens, the Americans arrived.
Oh, the
Dun, dun,
Americans.
dun.
We'll have more after the break.
Support for this podcast comes from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age.
Trust those hard-headed Americans to bring a dose of economic reality to the British market.
Economic reality is what we do, Patty Hirsch. When American mass-made bikes entered the market in 1897, it was basically like the entire British bicycle business had ridden over a nail. The American bikes were kind of scorned by purists who preferred the handcrafted machines that the Brits made. But the American bikes were cheap. They were just $25, which translated to about £5, which was half the average cost of a British bike. And they worked just fine. Apparently not the same problems with the electrical systems. Oh!
Oh! Anyway, the popularity and ubiquity of these American bicycles forced British firms to slash their prices at last. So it was clear to any objective observer that a lot of these companies, these British bike makers, couldn't stay in business for long. And yet, Will Quinn says, share prices remained stubbornly high. And one big reason for this might sound familiar.
A lot of the press at this time were very excited about bicycles, particularly the specialist press. So there was this body of cycling enthusiasts who would not have a bad word said about bicycles, who were just insistent that bicycles were the future, that anyone who thought that bicycles shares were overvalued just did not understand the spectacular potential of this new technology.
It's like Silicon Valley. It
Bitcoin.
Was Silicon Valley. Oh my gosh, Bitcoin.
I won't hear a bad word said about it.
By crypto.
Financial bubbles tend to expand slowly and then pop with a loud bang, like the housing bubble that popped in 2008 and caused the financial crisis. But the Great British Bicycle Bubble did the reverse. It expanded very quickly in just 2 months in 1896. But it took several years to deflate completely, so kind of more of a slow puncture than a bursting bubble, like the nail stayed in the tire.
In fact, it was nearly 5 years before the market really began to shake out. Of a total of 140 public bicycle manufacturing companies, 40 went bankrupt by 1901. And over the next 10 years, another 60 went out of business or just pivoted to other industries as bicycle prices fell. And the share of bicycle companies returned to a kind of equilibrium.
And by the way, that tremendous trade that started it all when Ernest Terahooley bought Dunlop for £3 million and sold it for £5 million, in the end, he admitted that he'd spent so much money on advertising and marketing to juice the share price that he only cleared about £100,000.
That still sounds, isn't that still a lot?
Not really.
No.
Not if you're thinking about that kind of investment. I mean, that's like a...
It's not Amazon money.
It's certainly not Amazon money, so... I'm sorry to burst your bubble there, Stacey. Our thanks to William Quinn at Queen's University for help with this story. He's got a bubblicious book coming out called Boom and Bust, and you can pre-order it now. This episode of The Indicator was produced by Lena Sunsgery. It is a production of NPR.